Hello and welcome. I'm Angela Saeva, founder of Equine Elevation and host of Sovereign Horse. Horses have been the greatest catalyst for growth in my life, and this podcast is no exception. Sovereign Horse was inspired by my herd as a space to explore what it means to support sovereignty in our horses and in ourselves. It is my absolute honor to hold space for the horses and humans who are driving the beautiful revolution and paradigm shift I'm seeing within the equine industry right now. My intention with this podcast is to share the voices and wisdom of the horses, as well as the humans who journey alongside them and whose work is honoring horses as sentient and sovereign beings. I am so grateful that you are here, and I hope you find value and resonance in this episode. Let's begin. All right, welcome everyone to another episode of Sovereign Horse. I am here with my guest today, Janie Roberts of Wild Horse Circle. Welcome to the podcast, Janie.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
Janie is inside our Equine Elevation community. That is our free space where we just come together as, you know, women who are on this journey of partnering with horses, and we support one another, we listen to one another's stories, and we share. So I would just say, if you're not in the community at this point, I don't know why you're not in the community, come on in. It's just totally free. And we meet twice a month. We have a community circle and we have a business circle. And there's just a really beautiful community of women in there. So if you're not in the space, come in and join us. You can check the link in the show notes for that. I'm excited to have this chat with Janie, and I'm not 100% sure where it's going to go, as if I'm ever 100% sure where it's going to go. But what I love about Janie, first of all, I love her energy. Let's just start with that. But the other thing I really love is that every time she's been on a call in the community space, I just love the way our conversations kind of vibe and flow. And so I am really excited to see where this conversation vibes and flows, because I don't want to put any restrictions on it. I just want to let us kind of be in the space and be present to what's here. So having said that, I'm just going to tell you a little bit about Janie. She is an educator and a guide who works in collaboration with horses and in connection with Mustangs, which I personally think is super cool. And she's going to share some about that with us. And her main teacher outside of the horses is the earth and the wisdom of the living world. And I'm just really grateful to have you here and excited to see where this conversation goes. So why don't we begin with you explaining a little bit about your work and that connection with the earth and that connection with horses?
Definitely, definitely. And I'd love to start in this moment to just like create a space of gratitude. So I'll do a little invocation, a little prayer, and then weave in a little bit about who I am. So I would love to just call in the gratitude for the earth, for the great mother, for the living world of creation that surrounds us and supports us and that which we are a part of. And I thank these elements, the four elements. I call in the four directions. I call in my own and all of our well and bright and benevolent ancestors. I call in our animal guides and our plant guides, the elemental kingdoms. And I ask that this conversation be a guiding light for us, for Angela and I, as students on this path, and also for those of you listening. So thank you. Thank you. Deep gratitude. And so it is.
Beautiful. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. Yeah. So I'm Janie. I love to give context and the situated relationships, right, that we all find ourselves immersed within. So I am currently in what is present day Colorado in the United States, Turtle Island, on the traditional lands of the Arapaho, Cheyenne, and Ute. And my work here with horses, I've been living in Colorado about 5 years, and I adopted my first Mustang Rogue about 5 years ago. And then a couple of years later, I adopted Sugar, who is a retired therapeutic riding horse. She's an appendix paint, and they are my duo, and they're also a part of a larger herd of mostly Mustangs, about 10 horses that are out on a property in Fort Lupton, Colorado. So out on the plains. I live up in the mountains and my horses are out on the plains. And Wild Horse Circle is a project that really, you know, I feel that as a guide or identifying myself as an educator, I also want to bring in, as I said in the prayer and invocation, I consider myself a student of life, right? An unending path of learning and growth. And really, I'm not here to put myself on a pedestal of having the answers, right? I can share from my own experience. So really, Wild Horse Circle is a community project that's centered around something that I found to be incredibly healing for myself, the path of the horse, right? The path of the herd, the path of just connecting in an open space and an open field with the horses. And my background is in anthropology academically. So I trained in cultural anthropology and really looking at the anthropology of education. So looking at the ways that culture informs the transmission of knowledge, the transmission of language. And I spent about 4 years abroad living in South Korea, France, and Indonesia as a teacher and also as a student of life, learning from other cultures. So in the context of Wild Horse Circle, I really wanted to create a space, and I like to refer to the space as the field. And I have three different ways of kind of identifying the field. So the field, right? It's the pasture, it's the open space. It's an actual field with all of the grass and the openness, and the horses are there. They're loose. They have the open invitation to come and interact with the participants should they choose, but it's also a large enough open space that they have the choice. And even if they are at a distance, paying attention through a process of deep listening to see that even at a distance, we can receive these messages of wisdom. And the second one, the field, is kind of the field of study, right? As an anthropologist of life framework, we talk about field study, going into the field to study, right? And the terminology in anthropology is actually participant observation. And I really like this idea of participating in that process of meaning making. And then the third is this idea of the field as the morphogenetic field, right? The quantum field, all of the histories and energies unseen and seen that exist in the collective culture of humanity and the more than human, right? And so that's kind of where I situate myself and situate this practice of hosting these circles for people to come together, to share, to express what is alive in the moment, and to receive the wisdom of the herd, as well as the earth, the plants, all the other buzzing creatures around. And it's really been such a profound and transformational space for me and for others as well.
I love the way you just talked about the field and your different levels of kind of explaining that and identifying those levels. That's just brilliant. I absolutely love that. I'm not at all surprised to hear you studied anthropology. That is like, feels like, yeah, of course you did. I think that's really cool. But the context in which you studied it and the way you described it is really interesting. I would love to know how you arrived at doing this work with the horses. Like, and I don't know if this question will apply, but my curiosity is like, did the horses lead you to the connection with the land and the earth, or was it vice versa? Or was it simultaneous?
So I think simultaneous. I grew up around horses with my family, and there was never a time that I wasn't around horses. And I also like to bring in that I was also raised, I was co-parented by my grandmother, who raise me in the garden. So raise me around plants. She was an incredible flower gardener. And
Wow.
she also was from the deep south. She was from Mississippi and she had a thick accent and she was really good at telling stories, as well as stories that related to the living and natural world. So she wasn't so much a horse person. That was more my older sister and father, but she really kind of brought in that connection to the land and to space and ecology and to storytelling. And then, you know, the horses, I was a child out in the field, like learning from them and learning from that embodied presence. And I really believe that there's like the deepest power I've found, or something that I've been sitting with, like in the reflection of what this horse work really is a reminding us to come back to our bodies.
Yep, that's the big one, isn't it? I think if we're willing and open to receiving that medicine from them, because I know for me, for the majority of my relationship with horses, I was not at all in my body. And it's so fascinating to me being on this kind of side of the journey, if you will, especially as someone who was primarily in the riding world to start with, that like that's not something anyone ever talked to me about, like being in my body but while trying to control a horse with my body. It's like it's a huge disconnect, right? And I think that's what I started to recognize in some of the people that I witnessed as very beautiful riders and how the horse would respond to them. And I didn't have a language or understanding of it at that time. But now when I'm able to look back, I realize like, oh, those people were embodied. So they weren't just like these robots doing mechanical things to make a horse, go from here to there in a specific way, but they actually did form a physical and energetic connection through their body as a vessel, not as a tool, I think is what I want to say about it. And I think that's why it looks so beautiful and also so elusive. I couldn't understand it because I was not embodied. So of course I couldn't understand it. But that was really the practice that came for me through studying body work, but then more primarily through studying horse medicine, as much as you can study horse medicine. Being a student of horse medicine, because that's really so much of what the magic is when you're able to drop into your body that way. I love that. So how did you kind of step into the space of holding these circles?
Yeah, so that's a beautiful question. So I'm here in the Boulder, Colorado area, and it is a very spirituality and wellness centric community. And I actually, for a long time, was more centered in Denver, which is a little larger urban area. So it's interesting to find myself here in the Boulder area. Because my spiritual path has been a really winding one, and particularly like the study and the reflections of like anthropology and other cultures, I've really developed a practice of like refining both the spiritual and then the like informed cultural information that exists, right? Like the systems that we find ourselves within. And I do believe that this like embodiment aspect of horse work that brings us back into our bodies is like we kind of have to look at stuff that we perhaps like pretend is not there, or have mechanisms that have, you know, it's like if I'm not embodied, I'm out of my body. It's like, well, what is the reason for that? And usually the root of that is some form of trauma. And when we look at those responses of like shutdown, freeze, fight, flight, freeze, right? All of these things that we experience as human animals, and horses also experience as well, like these states of dysregulation. These are really profound and important teachers, right? For us to see clearly what threat is present, right? And horses have a really great way of processing that through in their bodies, right? The shake, there's like a release of when that state of activation comes, they move through it fully. And as humans, we can get like really caught in the ideation. We can also get caught in situational aspects of trauma, which can be related to systems of oppression, right? Like there can be things beyond our control that are creating harm and not creating the space for us to fully process these things. So I do want to name that too, that it isn't just that like it's all on us as individuals to process our trauma. I think that it's very nuanced. And for me, practices of nervous system attunement, and for me, that's been breath work, cold exposure, as well as ceremonial experiences such as like plant medicine experiences that have really shown me and taught me. And this is in the context of very trusted teachers and guides with a lot of experience and lineage training around plant medicine. So I'm just going to contextualize it that way. But the internal work of my individual process, right, has been returning to the center. And horses really reflect in the moment the invitation to return to our center with honesty, right, with what actually is. And I was actually listening to a podcast, the Warwick Schiller Journey On podcast. He's an incredible horse person, and he's actually the, as far as I know, and I'm sure there are more, he's the only horse figure out in the public that I've seen talk about plant medicine work, particularly psychedelic assisted therapy. And he has an episode, he interviewed one of my friends that I recently met and highly recommend his work. His name is Will Sue, and they actually talked about the intersection of horse work and psychedelic assisted therapies. And it was kind of like Warwick was coming from the horse world into this psychedelic world, and then Will kind of came from the therapeutic doctor training and psychedelic assisted world into working with horses. So I do believe that there's like some really beautiful conversations to be had around like shutdown in horses and shutdown in humans and what it might actually be to get in contact with feeling the things that and even like creating safe spaces and trusted spaces for us to have those experiences of feeling the feelings to complete those processes and cycles.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important to discern too, like around the plant medicine, and that's not something I've experienced, but as an outsider kind of hearing about it, I think that, and this goes for pretty much anything, it's always to me like, what's the intention for doing that? And, you know, as a therapeutic process, that's not really actually something I've heard anyone describe it as before. I think that what my experience from, and again, just hearing about plant medicine is that it's like a spiritual tourism checkpoint. You know, I'm on the spiritual path, so I'm going to go experience plant medicine. And to me, when it comes from that place and in that context, it's really like, so that's kind of just another distraction or coping mechanism or, you know, way of not being with what life is asking you to be with, because you're like, well, maybe I can go step into this space and then not be experiencing that anymore. So that, to hear it from a therapeutic standpoint, I'm kind of curious, like, do you feel comfortable to share a little bit more about like what that looks like or the therapeutic element of it?
Totally. And yeah, so this is, yeah, it's an extremely sticky topic, right? Like there's a lot of different factors at play. And right now it is be something that is becoming popularized and commoditized, and as well as like advertised. Like you said, that like spiritual tourism is like, oh, like this is the thing that you need. This is the thing that is going to heal you, right?
Yeah, go to Peru, do an ayahuasca ceremony, and then there you go, sorted.
Totally.
Yeah.
So, and I can only speak from my own experience and the teachers that I've seen, and also like I do have some community connection to. So I do kind of want to. There's like a differentiation for me in the psychedelic assisted therapy worlds that are. There's a lot of great work, and they overlap too. There's a lot of great work in, and this is really in like mental health studies, more science-based and backed work. And I believe that like the episode that the Will Su episode, like he's talking particularly in that field. And for me, I actually kind of lean more, I guess I'm more of a traditionalist in the sense that I really believe that it's important that we honor and uplift and center the indigenous carriers of this wisdom that have been carriers of this medicine for centuries, if not millennia. And that being said, it's also important to bring in the discernment around romanticizing indigenous wisdom, particularly because, you know, these are sacred medicines and they have like very intricate spiritual cosmologies and cosmovisions and ways of working in right relationship with these plants as spirits that are to be highly revered, right? So that's like one context. And then in the psychedelic assisted therapy world, I think it was Stan Grof. He describes psychedelics like he gives a definition, and I, you know, it's a buzzword, and I really like to talk more specifically about each plant and their traditions. But for the sake of this podcast and for listeners that are interested, Grof's definition of psychedelic is a non-specific amplifier of the unconscious. So this brings in the question around why are we coming to this medicine? Also our like capacity to feel what's unconscious, right? Like
Yeah,
if we
sounds
have stuff,
terrifying.
yeah, like stuff we haven't worked through, you know, it's like it's going to amplify that. And if we're only in this framework of the Western materialist world that we've come from, right, where we think so much about like, I'm going to like commodify and think about extracting. And I actually only know like that's my programming and that's the only way I know to relate at all, right? This can come back to the horse work. It's like the domination and the control and the extraction, right, at the expense of others, right? So if I'm coming into these spaces and I have my unconscious blasted open, and I come back and I'm like, oh, well, like the medicine told me that I'm a medicine person now, and I'm gonna like bring this medicine to the world and save the world, right? Like it's interesting to say, like, can we take a step back and actually get curious about what that messaging might actually imply, right? And as well, like I think in these sacred spaces of ceremony, like safety is very central. So like having people there who have worked with the medicine for a long time. And some people might disagree with me on this, but I also think it's really important, particularly when working with indigenous lineages, that we have at least translators for meeting with the medicine carriers. So that there's like a bridge of languaging, because like I really believe, and one of my friends and teachers, her name's Brianna Lynn, like she has a podcast about plant medicine, and she's like, don't sit in plant medicine with anyone that you wouldn't trust your life with. And so I think that there's a lot of like implications around like what relationship building can be. And it's really important to be in safe containers. And it's also like the core of this. Like, I plant medicine has been one of the greatest, most profound teachers of my life, but only insofar as that, like, going into these realms of spiritual experience and the things coming up that become conscious, our work in plant medicine for me is really about how we integrate all of those messages into day-to-day life. And I think that there can be a pattern in plant medicine culture that it can be really hard. It can be really like intense shadow work. As well as like it can be really sparkly up there and beautiful, right? And that's amazing. That's incredible, right? But like it can also, I've noticed it can create patterns of wanting to escape the day-to-day world. Like if I just get more plant medicine, if I just see more, like, and then that becomes a way of escaping what I believe is like the messages of all of our modalities of healing. Like, I'm not really interested in the escapists. Like, we kind of talked about it earlier in the call with the group today. Like, I'm the like light and love escapism. Like, that's beautiful, but I don't feel like that's the work we're here to do. I do believe that it's like getting messy, getting in the mud with our horses, feet on the earth, and asking like how are the people that I'm looking up to? So maybe these are the facilitators you're working with, or the people you're learning from, or the community you're building with. Like, how are they showing up in their day-to-day lives? How do they treat people at the grocery store, right? Like, how is their relationship with their family? And I'm not saying that everyone needs to have a, it can look different ways, because this is all like nuanced and complex, and I'm really interested in getting curious in those spaces of like, this feels like a little both and, like it's this and also this. So I went on a long riff there, but I, yeah, that feels like a good place to pause.
So, yeah, the escapism part was what I was kind of getting out with the coping mechanism. And I think and I've spoken about this in horse medicine too, I don't think on the podcast, but on my Instagram, about like, you find this thing and it's this really beautiful practice and you feel very supported by the horses and then you keep going and leaning on them, except that now they become a crutch. So instead of actually like practicing self-leadership and walking yourself through the work, even if it's just an initial layer of the work, it's like now I go to my horses and then they just make me feel better. That is still a way to me of like bypassing what's actually there for you to be with. It's a totally different thing to say, okay, I recognize that there's something here for me to work through, process. Life is giving me this curriculum. I love that you said that, and I love that term too. I'm sitting in this curriculum. There's clearly teaching here for me. I'm going to do some work. I'm going to set an intention. I'm going to see if my horses have anything they want to offer me and support as partners in, because I know my horses are invested in my personal growth. But not to say like, well, now I feel terrible because something happened, so I'm just going to go outside and let my horses make me feel better just by being in their space. So, I think there's this is a bigger topic that really applies to pretty well anything that we want to insert here, right? Like food, relationships, different activities that we partake in, or even like consumerism and that kind of stuff, where it's like it's always to me that question of why. Like, why am I doing these things? What is driving me to that? What's the intention behind my doing it? And so I appreciate so much that you brought up these pieces of discernment. I had no idea we were going to touch on plant medicine, which is why I was like, hey, whatever, let's roll, right? But and even though we're talking about plant medicine in that case, it's like it's discernment. And as you said, like as you're choosing facilitators to work with, when we're I mean, that's the thing that for me, I'm like, who on earth would I ever be able to trust to like hold that space? I mean, that's a whole other thing, but Just by knowing a little bit about what plant medicine does, and as you say, like in that connection with the with our unconscious aspects of self, that having all that come up all of a sudden could be crazy intense. And then to be kind of in it, like you're in it until you're not in it, right? And I've even seen that in horse medicine, where sometimes a horse will activate something from someone's unconscious, and all of a sudden they're like, whoa, okay, hold on, like that's not A, what I thought was going to come up, B, what I'm interested in moving through right now, whatever the thing is. And it's like, okay, so how do we hold that sacred space for a person if something gets kicked up that like no one saw coming? And in some cases it's been things where I'm like, I'm not qualified to support you through this. I can hold space for you to like be with what's here right now. And also, I'm going to recommend that you seek someone who can like really support you to move through that.
This is so key. This is so key. Like, it's so needed. Like, I think that there's often in the healing world, especially if we're stepping into the role of facilitators and space holders, like, we want to like have all of the answers and be able to hold whatever comes up. But I think like really knowing our own capacity and like seeking more training, like the curriculum, right? Like, and walking the path ourselves, like it's really important. And like, yes, the training, yes, the tools, and yes, like it's like, of course, our horse collaborators, of course, like our plant medicine allies, like these can be relationships that we build, right? And that like relating, right? It's like, if I don't want this to be a crutch, like for me, it's been a practice of like pausing, getting really like clear and in rapport with like not only my intention, but also like perceived impact of how things are going to reverberate out. And like, it doesn't mean I'm going to have it perfect, right? Like, I'm going to make mistakes. And I think it's really important that we be okay with making mistakes along the way. And this is tied to like understanding our capacity, that when the big things come up and we really feel and understand that like our capacity to hold space in this way is not going to serve the other person, like understanding that that's like a much like braver and more vulnerable space to be in, and also much more helpful than pretending we can hold something that we can't. And I'm all for training, like I'm all for like trauma-informed work, particularly like for for the Western framework. We're so much in our mind, right? Like, and so much of like the speaking about the stories that exist, as well as like somatic work. And then something that I'd like to bring in, because it is very central to my own work and my own experiencing, and I know it's central to yours too, is like there's like the experiencing that comes through of like the human world and the ways that we story it. And then there's also like consciousness beyond the human, right? Like horse consciousness and energy. And this can be like individual horses. This can be like a more of a collective horse ancestral wisdom. This can be the wisdom of the plants, right? This can be wisdom of other lineages that we're within. And I think that like for me, it's been like a practice of like unlearning, and even that practice of deep listening, like out in the field, right? Like we can bring this in and be like, oh, like maybe there's an entire world that I can't see, that if I like get still and centered, could have some wisdom to share with me, right? And like I've also found that like acts of gratitude and acts of like curiosity to get in relationship with these things that are so beyond us as humans is really something we can invite into our daily practice.
Yeah, you know what? That this just made me think of, and maybe this will sound strange, but like the thing that supported me the most in like reconnecting with nature, which happened for me, I want to say like through the channel and pathway my horses created was like when we stopped being in the barn all the time and we were just outside. Like it sounds so simple, like duh. And yet, so many people, their relationship with horses is really like you spend so much time inside. You're in the barn, you're in the arena, you're right? You're like, you're competing, but you're in the ring. Where's the nature? Like we are nature with nature in nature, and yet we're so closed off from it. Like how it seems so crazy to me that that's even like a thing to say, and yet it feels profound to say it of like I connected with nature through my horses by being outside, and yet it was so profound to experience it because as you said, like we do live so much in this, like, in our minds, in this manufactured world that we perceive is like all that there is. And especially, I think for me, in those earlier years when I was really focused on the riding component, it's like there was really nothing else. And so, whatever it took was what it took. It was so, like, with the blinders on, it was like there was this one thing, this one goal, and that's what we're working toward, and whatever it takes. And then I always loved riding outside and hacking out and those types of things. But really, when it like blew open for me was when I actually started to have horses at home. And I didn't have a barn. I didn't have, like I had a little shelter that was inside for us. Everything we did was outside, free in the field. And that changed everything because that's when I started to learn actually about like having a real relationship, not this one-sided, I tell you what to do relationship, as I'm saying in air quotes, but an actual relationship where I would say, not even say, it began with like an observation of, wait a sec, I think that maybe that horse doesn't want this right now because she's free outside. And she just walked away. And I know again, it sounds so simple and it sounds so like rudimentary, but when you come from the space of control everything, manufacture everything, that small act of like allowing a horse permission feels like the biggest, most rebellious thing you could ever do. It's like a revolution just happened in your backyard because you said to the horse, "Oh, you don't want to be brushed? You don't have to be brushed." Like, what?
It's huge. It's huge. I love this. Yeah, I love that idea that you brought in. I've been sitting with this a lot, like kind of like that theme of like the inside, like inside, outside, right? Like the outdoors, the nature that's outside, and like I've been getting really like curious and asking questions around like, so I do believe that there are like systems and models, right? Like we like built houses for horses, right? Like we built the boxes around them because we live in the boxes, right? Like that's what we're used to. And they're
Here's your
going to be like
bedroom and
safe and clean, and there's no like dangerous threats. But it's like, well, so like it's at the expense of their like species specific behavior of wanting to graze and wanting to roam and wanting to have these herd interactions. And I work in the realms like, working with Mustangs, working with previously wild horses that are now in these domestic situations that like I believe are more optimal to living in the government holding facilities that thousands of them are currently situated in. I believe that coming into collaboration with human partners is one of many different ways to create better options. And so what is wild, right? Like, what is wild? What is, we use this word domestic and domestication a lot. And I've actually been shifting from like wild and domestic versus into like wild and captivity because I've actually found the domestic to kind of be more of a liminal space. And if we look at, I'm gonna get a little nerdy here as if I wasn't already, but I'm gonna get
That's
even
super
nerdier
nerdy. Go
here.
all the way.
So if we get into like the roots of these words, right? Domestic, Domus is the Latin word for home. And in our languaging, we also like to use this word like ecology and ecological and ecocentric. Eco, the root of it is the ancient Greek word oikos. It's a synonym. It means home. So I've really been like deconstructing this idea of like the domestic and the ecological, and it's like we belong to the earth. Like the earth is our home, right? So like how can we bring a little more wild into the domestic spaces as householders? Because we're householders. Like I really would love to be like the wild woman in the bush, like running around and having all of the resources, like knowing the land, all of that. But like the reality is that I'm living as a householder. So how could I like cultivate that as a practice as like a human to like have my sacred space of a home? And also like how can I reach out into that more expansive world that exists outside, air quotes outside? And then in that way, it's like what feels like home for horses, like more space, less captivity. And I really think it's like there's that, it's almost like the energy of contraction of like I'm gonna create this like wall around myself and I'm gonna feel trapped in my home and like disconnected from the nature, right? Like that lives outside because I'm protecting myself from some perceived danger that may or may not be real, into like expansion. Like can I hold that edge of like, wow, this is a really vast open space or like a dark forest. Like can I get in touch with like attuning my animal self to what the actual presence of danger might be and like move beyond that, right? Like, and I think that like expansiveness comes back to that like regulation of our nervous system, like getting in touch, getting centered. And like you said, like horses are great partners to go out into the landscape with, into the vastness. And like, yeah, so I'm kind of in this space of like what is rewilding? And like, can we, like we're naturally domestic. We naturally have patterns. We're cultural animals. We create culture and patterns. So like if I'm unlearning and deconstructing and trying to get beyond the confines of my domestic programming, like I'm gonna need something to like put in place because patterns, like we're cyclical animals. We like the patterns, we like the repetition. So what does that look like? I'm curious, what does that look like for you?
Oh my God. I'm like, how do I keep myself straight? So many things pinged for me when you were speaking. But what's really here right now is like, oh, I love talking about this stuff. So, I know you like briefly said about your astrology before we started. So, like, I'm a Sagittarius stellium. I am like, I'm so Sagittarius, Aquarius rising. I'm like, okay. Your girl needs to get out. Like, I need out. And the thing I really recognize about myself that I suppose I would like to say I remembered about myself in this whole process of my life completely changing a year ago now. When I was feeling very caged. Like I had everything I wanted, truly. And yet I felt very caged. Like, how can you have everything you want and yet still feel like you're shackled? The whole process of arriving there was liberating, and then you should feel liberated in the achievement of the dream, and yet it wasn't liberating. And so, everything changed, sold my farm, had no home. Lived in an RV on our friend's property and got this thing. It was like, it's time to drive west. Okay, where am I going? Just drive west. Okay, dogs in the truck, horses are cared for with my friends. And it was really hard for me because I hadn't left my horses in years. Like, I'd been their primary caregiver, right? And I receive so much joy from that. I love doing that for them and with them, and like, it's a beautiful process for me, and it's part of what was like slowly making me feel suffocated because I couldn't leave, you know? And there was this part of me that recognized that being settled, like rooted on the farm with them, was so simultaneously fulfilling and nourishing for me. And also, there was a part of me that craved the adventure that I was missing. And it's not like when I was young and I sought adventure in really unhealthy ways, just like anything to feel different than I did, or to control my environment, which I felt very, you know, out of control with my life and the way that kind of I grew up in this very rigid, structured home. But all this to say, like, when I started driving with no clear intention and I let my intuition just be the guide, I tapped into this expansiveness within myself that I totally forgot I could tap into. And, you know, long story short, we found a space, or rather, it found us. And this is where we live now, myself and my dogs and my horses, all on the same property, which was everything I wanted, which was the only thing I wanted, was for us to be able to still live together. And now, having been here for 6 months, I'm like, oh no, I'm settled again. I need to get out. And it might just look like going for a new place on a hike, like going somewhere I haven't been before, the other side of the forest from like where we usually go. It doesn't matter. It's just like that being in the unknown that opens everything up. And I think it's so interesting as you're talking about this, like almost like you know, the like external version of this expansiveness. And I feel it's so similar when we go within. And what is sometimes scary is like going into that space and realizing how vast we are within. And it's like, what do you do with that? And so I'm kind of sitting here in this really interesting situation now where I recognize within myself that, like, while I still really desire to have this, to have my own place again, my own farm, like I can see the land, you know, I know what it looks like, I know what it feels like, I know there's a connection for it. There's still this part of me that says, and I must also be able to be who I am, which is like to explore, to travel, to, you know, exploration can mean a lot of different things, but I do a lot of inner exploration already. I don't know if I really need more of that in my day-to-day life, but meeting people and, you know, tasting different foods and just like everything that is the diversity of life, and to be able to do that without feeling like because I'm doing that, I'm also like I'm abandoning my horses and they're not receiving what they need. I feel like now I went on a super tangent. I don't remember what the initial question was, but that was what was
Yeah.
really at the forefront. Yeah.
It's amazing. I love that. I love that. Yeah, it's like bringing in that like flavor of adventure into the different moments, right? Like as a practice. And like, yeah, I think it's so easy because we like live in this world of like duality and polarity where we're like, it's either I'm like rooted at home or I'm like out on the adventure. And I think there's like so much space in between to explore what the like melding of that can be, right? And like I love that. I also have a lot of Aquarian and Sagittarian energy as well, so I relate, yeah.
I think too, like the other part that I sort of lost in my tangent was that for my horses, like when I don't get to explore those aspects of myself, I bring them into it. And you know, you talk about patterns and cycles, and horses, I will say, my horses demonstrate that they are cyclical, rhythmic beings, you know? They, if you watch them in the field, they kind of have a pattern. Like at this time of the day, they're here, and at this time of the day, they're here. And of course, that's seasonal, right? But when I get a little too like, well, let me bring all this exploration out with you, they're like, well, hold on a second. We kind of liked the way it was, and I don't know if I need you to like come and spice up my life that way. Like, that's not to say we won't go on adventures if they want to, but it's not like I don't need them to fill that space for me, which I absolutely used to do, which was like, well, I have a desire to be more adventurous. So guess what? You're an eventer now, and we're going to go run cross country. And so I think in a way they've given me that permission, because you know what they said to me too was like, we never asked you to like stop being that, being who you are, and like to reject those aspects of self as like some sacrifice for us, or because you thought it only could be one way or another. And when they're like, actually, it's way better for us when you get to go and express that and release that energy and like do the exploration you desire. Because then when you come back, you're more grounded, you're more embodied, you've integrated what you've learned, you come in as a different person, and then we get to receive that from you, as opposed to being the ones who have to like do it with you when that might not be what we're interested in, right? So I actually have come around to how much it's honoring to them as well when I don't try to include them in all aspects of my life, because there are certain aspects of their life of my life they're like, no thanks, we're good.
Yeah, what a balancing act, right? Like, and it reminds me of my own relationship and refinement of like what it means, like working with my horses, and even just like all of the relationships, like whether it's human, animal, plant, like refining the receptivity to like asking permission in the moment and like remembering to do so for me has been huge. And it's not something that we're taught culturally, right? Like, and also like in that space, like asking for permission, but also like in that pause, I've found like the pause is that space of like coming into presence with what is, right? Like it's that space of like infinite possibility. And also like the pause is where we come back to our center. And I think that that's like when you and I have been using that word discernment, right? Like it's making the choice from that place of centeredness. Relative, right? Like relative centeredness, coming back to an attuned state, as opposed to that like activated fight, flight, freeze. Like I'm doing this because I need to get something, or I'm doing this because like I need to look a certain way, right? Or you know, like all of these motivations that like we don't really need, because in that moment of discernment, we get to make a choice and we get to respond. And like, I don't know if you use this word in the same way, but I'm like with the horse work, like responsibility, like I separate them into response and ability. It's our ability to respond. And like, we can only make those choices of discernment from like coming back to our center.
I love that you said relative centered, relative center, because I think there's this like misconception that like centered looks like this and it looks like this all the time. And if you're not doing it like this, then guess what? You're doing it wrong and you're not centered. Whoa, hold on a sec. First of all, we are all on our own journeys. Centered to me today is not what centered to me looked like 6 months from now. Or, sorry, 6 months in the, how do I say that?
Ago.
Ago. Oh my God, thank you. And I'm sure it won't look like 6 months from now. It's like we have to also honor each day and as the horses do, like receive ourselves as we are and receive each other as we are. And also not compare. So like, what does centered look like to you versus to me? It doesn't matter. It's my journey and your journey. And on this given day, I might be able to get 50%, towards the center. That might be all I can handle. It might be good enough that I'm no longer in, an extreme state, that I've been able to get a little bit grounded, that I've been able to come a little bit more into my body. And so discernment from that place, of course, will look different than if I was like really centered and really in my discernment. And it's okay, because we have to still live life and move through life. And so if we're always kind of holding ourselves to, and I think this is a big one with personal growth, and I don't know if you can relate to this or not, but like, you unlock a level, right? Let's say you unlock something new within yourself. And it's amazing to experience that. Like, you get that range, you get cracked open, your edge expands. And then the sort of Western expectation is like, well, now you can live there all the time forever. Right? And it's like, oh, well, actually, I can't access that all the time forever. But it's cool to know that I got there, and then that gives me, some hope that I can get there again. But that doesn't mean that's like my new 100 all the time, right? Like, can you relate to
Absolutely.
that?
Oh my gosh, 100, 100. This is, I find myself in Boulder, Colorado, right? And I said this earlier, and I'm like, why, what? And I know, I'm like, okay. Like, this idea that there's something, right? Or someone, or like a goal to get to, right? Like, it takes us out of the present moment. And like, so I'm a part of this, like, incredible mystery school called Orgasmic Oracle Mystery School, and it's started by Reverend Brianna Lynn, who is an incredible human, and she's created this like very accessible and laterally based mystery school to like explore a lot of these themes and topics that I'm talking about here. But she has like this central phrase that I think she learned from one of her teachers, and it's, everything is perfect in this moment, and so is my desire that it be different. So it's like bringing in that desire as well. Like, yes, like we're on, like if we're here to awaken, and that's something that we're choosing to do in this life, then yeah, like the healing path might be a part of our curriculum as humans, but it's not like I'm going from point A to point B to point healed, right? Like, and then I'm perfect. And I think that that idea of perfection is really like a mechanism of like our economic and political systems, that if we keep all of the people like reaching for something outside of themselves in a state of like hustle, if I just do this, if I just take this course, if I just work with this person, if I just sit in this ceremony, if I just like blah 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 blah, if we're in that state, like it takes us away from the reality that like everything is perfect in this moment. And it takes us away from the reality of what is. And I'll just share, like, hi puppy, your visitor's here. He's kissing. The most profound, like noticeable magic that happens in the horse circles is like there's the invitation to share. Where we're at, like wherever we're at. And I know that you know this, and a lot of people listening will know this, but there's something that happens energetically and in our bodies. Like if I show up and I'm holding it in, but then I'm given the space to be like, oh, I had such a frustrating day. I was angry, and that's what I'm feeling in this moment, right? That's all that I say. There's actually like a subtle shift in my body just from naming it and speaking it. It releases. And then I've found that the horses respond. And it's like really beautiful. Like it's always the most noticeable shift, because they're understanding, like when we're out there in the field, and like whether or not you want to like say that we're becoming a part of the herd, or we're, a human group interacting with the horse group, like we're a part of a collective field in the field. And when we name grief, when we name frustration, when we name joy, like whatever it is, and it like releases from our body, the horses recognize that there's a balancing that's happening that's bringing us all together into a state of more congruence. And there's no judgment around it, right? Like, and I think that that's like the horses reflecting that Brianna Lynn quote, like everything is perfect in this moment, and so is my desire that it be different, right? And so is my desire for more, right? Like it's all perfect. and there's nowhere to go. There's no goal to get to, because like all we really have is this moment, and like that's the horse medicine right there, right?
So good. It was like in early 2020 when we were all locked at home that I really anchored into that truth within myself that there is no destination. And up until that point, if you had said that to me, I would have fought you to that. Like bring it. What's that?
I was totally
Like
there with you. We would have been fighting each together.
right. Like, oh, you didn't realize you just entered like the battle ring? Well, guess what? You did. And I am an epic debater, and I already have 15 points that are going to slay you as to why you're wrong about that. And I distinctly recall doing a puzzle. I had not done a puzzle in, I don't even remember the last time I had done a puzzle. I had all these puzzles, like I was some sort of like master puzzler or something, and all of the boxes were still wrapped, cellophane, right? Like not open. And I decided I was going to do a puzzle, and it was this moment where there was one piece left, and I was about to put the piece in, and I couldn't do it. And I was just looking at it, and all of a sudden it dropped in. I was like, oh my God, I understand what that means now. It's about the journey because I actually don't want it to end. Like, I don't want to put this piece in because I don't want to arrive at the destination. And, like, sure, I could take the puzzle apart and do it again, but it wouldn't be the same. Like, I wanted to continue to enjoy the journey I was on. And all of a sudden, I just had this profound moment of realization of, like, oh my God, all of this forcing I've been doing to, like, get there, become this, do the thing. And I'd become really fantastic at manifestation at this point, by the way, if I do say so myself, like very excellent at manifestation. And I realized in that moment that all of the manifesting I had been doing was so ego-based, and it was about the destination, and it had nothing to do with the journey. And that's why it never felt satisfying, because I would get the thing and you're like, great, my prize. And then the joy lasts like a second. And you're on to the next thing. And it was so profound. It changed so much for me. And I remember at that point, like, being in the herd with the horses and kind of anchoring into that and just realizing so many of the things they'd been trying to share with me that revolved around that truth that I just wasn't able to receive. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about this. Because I finally integrated it and it became mine, and I realized like I need to make a lot of changes in my life. Not that I need to, but like I'm choosing to now make a lot of changes in my life because so many of the things I'm doing, seeking, actively working toward are like these false senses of insert word here, happiness, satisfaction, success, whatever. Right. And, you want to talk about coming into congruence. I remember landing in it and the horses all just being like, ah. And it was so beautiful. I'm like, right. Y'all have been trying to point that out to me, haven't you? Okay. I finally receive it and I thank you. And also, I'm like, thank you for your patience because sometimes I'm a slow learner. And they always just wait for me to come around. They're so brilliant.
That's so beautiful. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Like, I think, like, same process. And still, right? Like this, like story and mechanism goes so deep, like in our culture, in the economic systems we inhabit, right? Like, and I think too, it's like if we think about it as we're talking about embodiment at the beginning, if we talk about it, it's like when we're in those states, if we're like outside of like the integrity of our own knowing, then we're much easier to manipulate. So I think like I also want to call in like so much compassion for ourselves and compassion for one another, when we're on this journey of like unraveling, like there are so many contexts that like don't have the privilege and the space to like tap into even a semblance of whatever the like new age world would consider like wellness, right? But like and like I think that like understanding that and opening to that, like I really believe in like we started, I don't know if we were talking about it before we were recording or if it's come in yet, but we were really talking about community and connection, and like I really think that like you know like the herd dynamic and the congruence like and the relationship building, like all of this is like so key and like a part of the path. And I think that we live like at least in the Western world, the Western cultural context, it so forcefully uplifts this idea of like radical individualism and self-sufficiency, and that creates a lot of loneliness. And again, that's like another mechanism that like we're beings that need other beings. Like we're social mammals, like horses. So like if I'm in this space of loneliness and out of my body and in these states, like again, it's like much easier to like point me to like buy this thing or to think that if I do XYZ just like a little bit longer and like suffer, right? Like that's another lie that I need to suffer to like get this thing, this goal at the end, right? Like, oh man, it's like it's so messy and complex and nuanced. And I think that I kind of lost my train of thought there, but I think you kind of got what I was hinting at and toward.
Well, and if I may, what this makes me think of is like, then it becomes so obvious why we then take all that and take it out on our horses. And why, like,
Totally.
so many of the behaviors that we see that are commonplace and normalized, like, they're rooted from that same place you were just speaking to. And it's like, this goal-oriented, very like masculine, individual, success-driven society, of course it lends itself then to, mistreatment of horses, because if they're not in line with the goal, then make them be in line with the goal, or get rid of them and find a horse who'll do it. And that happens in like society, right? Like in so many people's careers, like if you're not willing to do the thing that they want you to do at the price they're willing to pay you for it, then you're expendable. And even like, man, I think about people in my family who are much older than me who were sold the story and the system of like, you get this job at 17 and you work it till you die, and then laid off at 45, 50, 60, right? Like, now what? Like, now what do you do? And it's that same thing of like, well, you're expendable because you didn't like just fall into the line. And man, there's no community there. There's no support of one another there. It's so cutthroat, and there's no human element to that at all. There's the human element, but really, I want to say like the just element of like compassion for the fact that you're alive. So like any being is what I'm trying to say, which goes the
Totally.
same for like the tree in the yard that you cut down for, the wood that you keeps you warm in the winter. Like I went through this whole thing this winter because I, for the first time in my life, have a wood stove, and I had to buy wood and chop wood. And I had this whole thing of like, is it okay that I'm doing this? Like, is it okay that I've asked this tree to sacrifice itself for the warmth of myself and my dogs? And like, it really became this spiritual practice for me, chopping this wood, and I did it every single day, and people couldn't understand why I was doing it that way. And my neighbor has this like automatic, I don't remember what he called it, but anyway, he's like, you put the wood in here and it chops it for you. I'm like, no, I must chop the wood myself. He's like, well, I'll check back in with you in a month and see if you feel the same. And for 6 months of winter, I chopped wood every day. And it was like very important for me to do that because it was an act of reverence for that tree and for the beautiful cycle of like, yes, that tree gave itself now. Did it know it was giving itself for me? No. And like, were there other families who got to benefit from that tree as well? Yes, of course. But like, it felt so, well, many things. It felt radical. It felt beautiful. It felt deeply spiritual and like just the right thing to do to constantly offer my like gratitude to that tree, to those pieces of wood that I was chopping up. And like, I would look at them and I would like be curious about that tree. Like, how come you've got this bend in you? And like, where, what did that look like when you were upright? And you know, like, and then when you start a fire, there's this like incredible practice that goes with it. And I think like so many of these simple acts that used to be very communal, you know, they meant so many important things about connection that we've lost so much in this age of you know, technology. And again, I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier of like this, it's really, it's more of a Western thing. Mind you, some of the Eastern cultures have adopted that now, which we'll see how that all goes. But now I'm on a tangent. But there was this there it felt very satisfying to like light to chop that wood and light that fire on behalf of like myself and my dogs in this home to be like, we're and like this is nourishing for us because this means we get to stay warm and survive. And so I think what I'm trying to say is like the community element that I know you are so connected into is like everything. It's not just our humans or like our horse friends, but like the earth, the land, all of the resources that we tap into. And yeah, I've gone so far off the deep end
Oh
now.
no, I feel like it's so connected though. I like had a moment like you brought in that thread of like I was like I lost my train of thought and then you like went on the community thing. And I think too like what you're speaking to, it's like the chop wood carry water, like as well as like bringing ritual practice into your life and bringing in that state of gratitude and that state of cultivation. Like I think like as well like we're very conditioned to be in states of like ease, right? And we're very conditioned to like have our relationships be transactional. Like even our language, like English itself is a very like economic trading centered language. Like, and I think like to get beyond that is to really get into that space of like possibility of connection as well as like as well as practice, right? Like that was a deep practice for you, chopping wood every day. And I think that that also like connects to this idea of like ritual practice and like the ways that we like cultivate the beginning and ending of things and getting really into relationship with those like cycles of nature and celebration and gratitude. And like I think it also relates to like, yeah, like where is this wood coming from? Like who are the people that like cut the tree or who are, you know, like or my food, like where did this come from? Who are the farmers? Like you and we could get into the like economic systems. I think like getting to into a state of gratitude as well as like getting curious about like our access in the transactional world that does exist, right? And like what does it mean? Like if I do want relationship, like how can I choose? Because like right now we are situated in transactions in so many aspects of our world and we are dependent on those systems. But and also like we've been given this lie that we're like independent, right? But we're interdependent and like we're pretty like dependent, right? Like if I didn't have the wood to buy, right? Or like the food to buy, You know, like maybe some of us are off-grid and growing our own food, but that's like a really intense process, and not everyone is doing that or has access to do that right now. So it's like, what are the ways that, like, in that community building and relationship building with my resources and the earth and the firewood and all of these things, like, and like I said, like, I don't have the answers, but I think these types of conversations, it's really alchemical, right? Like, I think remembering instead of transactional, like, the thing in the middle is not like money and an apple. Like, the thing in the middle is something new that wants to be birthed between us, you know, like, and I think creating that space, you know, like, you're creating these circles of, you know, horse people talking about the horse things in a different way that are challenging the status quo and these systems of like domination and oppression and how that shows up in the horse world and what it might look like to be walking in a different way and to not be alone in that.
Yeah. Well, what I found for myself and for so many others who, I've had the pleasure of meeting and knowing in different spaces, that the isolation is actually the thing that ultimately makes them question whether or not they can continue on that path. And I never really piece that together because I am so highly independent and individual, and it doesn't bother me to kind of walk a path alone. Now, there was a major shadow for me in that in an earlier time of my life, but in the transmutation of that, I arrived at a place of realizing my true inner strength and also my autonomous nature, honestly. It doesn't mean I can't be in relationship, but even within my relationships, I really need to have still my autonomy. I think we all do, and it just varies, I also am kind of really talking about sovereignty as I'm talking about autonomy, but so it wasn't as obvious to me until I started to see it in others that isolation was really this thing that started crippling people, because it's one thing to be in isolation, and then to add on top of that, the backlash of just being who you are, right? Like, how many people have experienced doing something with their horse and then having someone who wasn't even involved in the situation coming over and giving you five reasons why you were wrong to do that when you were feeling out like how to be in right relationship with your horse in that moment? And maybe they witnessed a miscommunication, or there was something muddy about it, or whatever it was, and now they've latched on to that and they're gonna tell you why they know better than you. And it's like, yeah, if you hear that enough, if you get that thrown at you enough, sure, that breaks you down. If you don't have a community to support you and say, like, man, I saw in a community group on Facebook, maybe it was yesterday, I don't even know how I saw it because I'm never on Facebook, but this woman, oh man, my heart just went out to her. She had received some really, like, really, her horse had a health issue that was not going to be reversed, was basically what it was. And she knew that she needed to transition this horse, but she also had another horse who had been extremely bonded with that initial horse. They'd been together for like 17 years. And they're older. She was like, "What do I do? My intuition tells me to let them go together, but the people around me say, but that horse still has life in them, and I don't know what to do because I want to honor both of their needs, and I also don't want the horse that's left behind to like be feel completely alone and abandoned, right? Like they're so bonded." And so she went onto this Facebook group to ask. Oh, like just imagining being in that moment and then feeling like I need to go and ask strangers to let me know if this is okay. Like I feel really emotional about it. And I was like, part of me wanted to scroll through the comments and part of me was scared. I started to scroll, and every single person told her, "You're doing the right thing. Trust yourself. Trust what your horse is saying." And I was like, that was a moment that could have so easily gone the other way of everyone telling her, like, "You are wrong. You have no business euthanizing the other horse." And everyone supported her and not only just said, "You're doing the right thing," but like gave her so much love and compassion for like A, showing up and asking that question in a Facebook group. Like, wow. B, for being so, thoughtful about the horse who'd be left behind and to do the thing that was hard for her if it meant it was better for him. And, I'm not saying I have an opinion one way or another. It was really more about the human interaction and that element of compassion that I was really so happy and like relieved to see, because I know in so many moments where people have had to face that moment of like, I'm going to transition my horse, and all there's people around them that have all kinds of opinions of why they're wrong to do it. And like, man, it's so hard to even be in that position and then to receive unsolicited opinions about why you're not doing it right on top of it. If you don't have such a really strong sense of self and sovereignty, that would absolutely crush you. And so, yeah, I just was so moved by seeing that. And it's I don't know what will end up happening, but I also just sincerely hope that the horses are honored in whatever it is that they need, and that she's supported through the process too, because what a position to be in. And yeah, it was like a moment of hope for me to see that.
Wow. Yeah, that's so powerful. And yeah, just taking a moment. Like I think too, like it speaks to, this depth of like what it really is to be embodied in this work with horses and to be in relationship with them, and also like cultivating that heart connection. And like I think that that's perhaps listeners that don't that have more like curiosity around horses, or like haven't been on the longer journeys. It's like this is like one of the deep and present aspects of, and it's like it's deep and present in the human experience too, these like cycles of life, death, life. And yeah, and it can be so charged, right? And I think what you're speaking to, the like openness and like the honoring of this woman, just like the amount of respect for someone that, like, even if they are feeling charged around or feeling that they, it's like we want to have the right answer in this like vast mystery of something that like this is a topic that perhaps we can't have the right wrong answer around, but it's something so mysterious and to be honored. So I really love that. And it, it's like holding each other, right? That's like we need more of that, more of the unconditional love. And yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what really struck me, was that it was such an opportunity for the pointing fingers and the saying, "This is the only way." And instead, it was just comment after comment of love and compassion. And, that's also what my intention with the community, the Equine Elevation community, is to allow people a space to be vulnerable, that's safe, where they're not going to receive that backlash, where it doesn't mean we all have to agree with one another, but we can receive one another in our truth in that moment, and be okay enough in our own selves to allow that person the space to express themselves, right? And that circles back to kind of what you were speaking to at the beginning, right? Is like not bypassing these emotions as they come up, and just allowing them to be there and sitting with them, because there's so much juice in that. There's so much life in that. Like, yeah. And sometimes it's difficult to do that alone. and we just want someone to be on the other, no, there's someone on the other side of that computer screen somewhere else who's going to look at this and just say, like, I witness you. And then that's enough, right?
That witnessing is so powerful. And I think it's like, yeah, it's like even in the like acceptance of ourselves, and then it expands to like acceptance of the other. Like, and like you were saying, that like we might have differing perspectives, but can I be centered enough in myself to like not show up needing to change you, not showing up needing to convince you? And like, yeah, like the witnessing, just like allowing one another to be. And like, I think there's so much like potency in that witnessing, whether we are the one witnessing or the one being witnessed, as we are.
Yes, as we are. I love it. Janie, I could talk to you all day. I want to honor your time because I just looked at the clock, was like, oh my gosh, we've been talking for a really long time.
We've been talking.
Including that we talked earlier today and we talked on Monday. I love it. Is there anything else that you want to speak into the space before we close up?
I'm so grateful for you and for this opportunity to connect and to share with your listeners. And yeah, highly recommend the Equine Elevation community. And the puppy's saying hi. He's like, I want to, I'm here.
Puppies are allowed in the community.
Yeah. And yeah, if you all want to follow me on Instagram, my Instagram handle is wild.horse.circle. And yeah, kind of, I have my link tree up in the bio there, and feel free to reach out. And it's just such an honor to be here and to be in this space that you're cultivating for these beautiful conversations. I just have so much gratitude to you. So thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's an absolute honor to have you here. I would love to have you on again. I would love to just keep having like conversations with you because they feel so grounded and also expansive at the same time. And that's really like, that's my jam. You know, that's the space I love to hang out in. So when I find people who can hang in that space and who, allow me to really be authentic in that space too. It's such a gift, and that's part of what this community is. And it's a stretch for me too, to be honest, to like have that community space how to hold it and to be in these connections. But time and time again, when I open myself to those types of experiences, I'm rewarded. I am rewarded beyond measure, and I consider our new connection a reward. So I thank you so much, Janie. It's been absolutely wonderful to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Angela.
Thank you so much for joining me here. I sincerely hope you found resonance within this episode. If you did, I'd love to hear from you. Reach out to me on Instagram at Equine Elevation, or you can find me online at equineelevation.com. Until next time.